the Hellboy and Hell panel, but the problem all of the different people that are coming in, all the Hellboy folks at B30 and Bruce Hunter and Miles Johnson. And the way we generally do these panels is we talk for like a couple of minutes and then we hope that you guys have questions. So there's mics in the aisle. It's too big a room for you to just call out your questions. So when we wrap up our little intro, please step up to the mics if you have questions. And if you have questions, then otherwise it could be really dull. I will start by introducing everybody.
It's probably not too early to get in front of a mic if you have questions, because we're going to do the announcement stuff really fast.
Let me start by introducing everybody. Down at the end is Tyler Crook, the regular author. To my left is James Herron, who will be drawing the summer feature of these. He's got the first feature, and he also is going to be drawing the summer feature. I'm Scott Alley, I'm an editor at Dark Horse. And this is my field, it's really up that have been recently announced or are being announced right now. Tyler right now is working on finishing up Return of the Master, which is starting this month, right? Like, the first one out? Return of the Master is like the most like earth-shattering, literally, story that we've done in a while. Some big things happen by the end of it. Got a lot of cool pieces on the table. Immediately after that, James and I are doing a story called The This Is Time, which follows in a couple of issues after Return of the Master. And,
James and you and me.
Oh, that's right, sorry. Mike Granola is a creative publisher, ladies and gentlemen. And this one really was all my story, and I just kind of got it put together. And it features a couple of, a few B30 agents you haven't met before who show up on a mission to Chicago, and as always happens in our books, things end really badly. After that, it's hard to remember everything in order. After that, Peter Snyder. Is back. Peter's done a number of things with us over the years. He did Name Saving, doing the right movie, and he did BKB One Shot for more
design
products. And now he's doing this two-parter called A Cold Day in Hell with Mike and John, which brings the Russian occult bureau back into it with what's his name, Yosef Yuchenko, and some new BKB characters. Actually, what's her name, Jiroko, which I think the first time she appeared was a long time ago, somebody else appeared. Tyler's drawn her, and James has drawn her, right? In Long Death. How many people read Long Death? That was your feature deeply. That was the thing that knocked our socks off when we said, okay, more stuff for James. The next one I want to mention is just it's the first time that we've got Lawrence Campbell. Who's doing some great stuff. Lawrence Campbell, who I think has mostly worked for Marvel in the U.S., is doing a really great story with Mike Mercuti called Wasteland, which also goes to the University of Chicago. And then the other book that we're announcing now is,
let me just say, one thing that Scott just demonstrated is how far out we're working. So I think I know there are publishers out there where they're 2 months away from not having the book on the stands. but we have so many different artists working on this stuff at different rates and schedules, which is why it's sometimes confusing. But which book is out and which book is next? Because so many books are currently in the works. But it does guarantee you're going to get a monthly book for certainly the foreseeable future.
Morlos Johnson coming. And that's all written by Mike and John, and we've got a one-shot drawn by Kevin Nolan, which is coming together, which is beautiful, and a two-part of Sebastian Fiamara, who is incredible. Sebastian's brother Max did a one-shot with Mike and I earlier this year, the Professor O'Donnell one-shot, and then he said, well, my brother also likes your stuff, and he saw Sebastian's work, and it's absolutely beautiful. He's also been doing a lot of work for Marvel, but now we're going to try to kind of keep him busy on our stuff. Right. And we recently announced 1948 with Gabriel Moon and Fabio Gabriel.
No, 48 is Max Fiamara, right?
Yeah. See? You
really
are. Yeah. I got it all written down
today. We have two sets of brothers currently working for us, and they're all from South America someplace. So it is a little confusing.
Right. The twins, Gabriel Ba and Fabio Moon, are doing a follow-up to the series dated 1947 and the thing that Arcudi and Max are doing right now, 1948, which is called BPID Vampire. And it's set in 1948.
It's stunning.
It's the it's the weirdest thing we have going on.
Yeah. Except for Hellboy
and Hell. Hellboy and Hell are also very weird. First issue of Hellboy and Hell is out in December.
Christmas book called Hellboy and Hell. But it's actually much more Christmassy than you would imagine.
Right, you know, Christmas material. But no one can hit the microphone. And we're done with our part, so it's up to you guys to ask the questions. Unless you guys have comments, we won't know. That's what I thought.
You. Alright. I don't know if I had to ask this yesterday with Guillermo del Toro's and Marvel Panels. Hellboy 3?
Hellboy 3 or possibly a BPRD movie?
Well, what did Guillermo say?
Yeah, I don't know if I
should
ask you.
Yeah.
No, I don't know why.
I usually say leading off before questions, and there's no word on Hellboy 3. And it really isn't, other than del Toro saying in a recent interview that he'd like to do it. So that's a long way from it getting done, because there are 3,000 other movies that he wants to do. So I'd love for him to do it. Ron would love to do it.
I just don't know what happens after he just quit.
Yeah, I'd be kind of curious myself.
Thanks.
Yeah, so the whole thing with Hellboy is a big drama between fate and choice.
Right.
And now that he's dead, he's in hell. So does that seal his fate, or is that
no.
Is there still room for redemption?
Oh yeah. There's a whole big mess that goes on in hell. Which I won't get into because I hope by the comic. But it isn't like, oh, you're dead. Now get on this throne, you're the king of hell. Some stuff happens. The first four issues, which are monthly, are all about settling Hellboy into hell, and I think hopefully resolving certain things about Hellboy's predestination. I've been trying almost since the moment I brought it up to put all that stuff to bed and get Hellboy just back to being a guy who just wants to, you know, walk around and, you know, eat white monsters. Pancakes not so much, but that was always meant to be a one-note gag. It's the first four issues kind of settle him in, and then actually the plan, well, the first four issues are monthly, there's one story, and then the plan will be as much as possible to do one-issue self-contained stories as Hellboy adventures around hell. It's trying to turn itself into a gigantic, cumbersome epic, and I'm trying not to let it do that. But all I'm going to say is, and it's going to come out as often as I can do it, but I do want, you know, my first priority is to make them good. But if I do a two-issue story or a three-issue story, those will be monthly. So I'm not going to leave you hanging for a couple months, you know, while Hellboy's, you know, falling down a hole.
Thank you. So I really dug Baltimore. I know it's not Hellboy-related, sorry, but I was curious as to if you were to tackle another kind of like genre of war and do an illustrated novel.
I've done 3 illustrated novels now. The third one comes out, well, it's at the convention floating around at the Midtown Comics group. It's a cute little small book that mostly is written by Chris Golden, very little to do with me, but I illustrated it. But I have no plans to do any more novels right now because I'm having so much fun doing the comic. And after 7 years of floating around in confusion, not drawing the comic, now that I'm back, I just want to draw this comic. So that's my plan.
Yeah, I always really enjoy your introduction before the stories, where you sort of list some of the influences from other literary works. And I was wondering if you could make like a reading list before going into Hellboy and Comic Hell. Are there any books that you put out there, or other things to sort of read up on and get the vibe from?
I've always drawn on so many different sources. It's not like, in some cases, I may say, this is one particular source. The first 4 issues are a hodgepodge of a million other things. It's sort of some Milton is in there, Paradise Lost. Not too much. You don't have to do your homework before you read it. I do know that unless I change my mind, the 5th issue is a very bizarre loose adaptation of the Grimm's fairy tale. But I'd rather you didn't read it before you read my
version. James just reminded me, because I tried to put this book out of my mind, that in the back of Hellboy Companion, you did read this at some point. It doesn't directly relate to all the time, but you did have this list of books.
Right. It's always easy to state my sources after, because I really generally don't know really what I'm doing when I start.
My thing's also not related to Hellboy, but I'm wondering if you're gonna go back to the amazing Screw-On Head
editing. Very common questions, I appreciate. No, because I got away the first time. I mean, some characters, even like now back doing Hellboy, every time I draw a page of Hellboy, I'm making up 3 other stories for Hellboy. Screw-On Head, the minute I finished Screw-On Head, it just felt done. Everything I wanted to do with that character was there. Even when I did the collection, the Amazing Screw-On Head collection, the original plan had been to do not even new stories, but to do 5 or 6 images of Screw-On Head, like scenes from other adventures that I was never going to tell you about. But I couldn't even draw that. He was so much of his time that other than one illustration of him being torn to pieces by giant crabs, which maybe means something, I just couldn't get back to that character. So I did him as well as I knew how. Leave the people wanting more.
Are we ever going to see any more Lobster Johnson crossovers, to the modern BPRD universe or even in Hell?
You know, it's funny, because somebody asked me the same kind of question about Lobster Johnson in Hell, which had never even occurred to me. So there's nothing planned. Yeah, there's nothing planned, but the beauty of what we're doing, I should say that, but what we're excited, John and I and Scott, is how many places we find for these different threads that seem completely unconnected to connect. So we're not forcing the issue. Unless, of course, Hellboy and Hell sells really poorly, I do know one of the things I can do is stick Lobster Johnson in there and, juice things up a little.
Are we ever going to see Roger again?
I can't say never. The beauty of Roger went out really well. But I do always say that when people die in the Hellboy world, including Hellboy, they become a lot more interesting. So I wouldn't want to overuse Roger, and I don't think he's going to, I kind of got an idea of something. He's dead. So, I left him as a little baby sitting there with a big ball to play with, and it just seemed so cute. It'd be a shame to make him get up and do some heavy lifting.
Hey, first of all, I want to say that you're my biggest inspiration. I'm trying to do right. All your work is like everything I love in reading, folk mythology, superheroes, and you just combine it all and you mean the What would you say to an aspiring, you know, artist slash creator?
I've got my, you know, kind of dreamy rose, you know, colored glasses answer to that, which is isn't that absurd. At least try doing exactly what you want. You know, I see too many comics out there where guys are trying to sell a TV show or trying to do a comic because this other guy's doing this comic that seems like a popular comic. The most absurd question I ever get is people saying, well, how did you make up a commercial franchise? Well, if I said I had to make up a commercial franchise, I sure shit wouldn't call it Hellboy. That's not what you do. So, maybe it's not going to work. You know, but at least, and this is even for, you know, working cartoonists who come up to me and say, oh, I'd like to do what you're doing, but, you know, I'm under contract for DC, blah, blah, blah. You know, if you find time, make time to try doing your own thing. If all you want to do is Spider-Man, cool. I mean, you know, but the guys who come up to me and say, but I really want to do what you're doing, except that DC's paying me X amount. Well, make up your mind. Either do it for the paycheck, but if you really have something you're dying to do, do it. And do what you want. Because if it works, as it did in my case, which didn't work right away, but it worked well enough, you do what you want, and if it works, guess what? You're stuck doing the book you actually want to do. There was talk early on, you know, these guys were doing their stuff, and I got kind of an offer filtered through people back to me that if I want to do a book for Image, I can do a book for Image. And I started trying to think about some kind of commercial thing, sort of a Batman kind of thing. People like weighted Batman. And I thought, man, I end up making up something that I wouldn't enjoy, that isn't really me. And chances are it wouldn't sell. So I'd spend a year, you know, I'd be the first guy to get an Image book that didn't make money. And I thought, do I want to spend a year doing that? Or if it is successful, do I want to be stuck doing a book that I don't really care about? So, you know, but I mean, as far as real advice about breaking into business, you got to talk to a younger guy than me, because I broke in, you know, in 1982. It is an entirely different planet. So I don't have any real practical advice for getting into this, you know, business.
So you're saying no commercial, so there's no chance of you writing the Amazing Shamrock.
What's that?
No chance of you writing the Amazing Shamrock.
Okay.
Hi. I was wondering how long ago you started planning Hellboy's death and what kind of started the idea?
Well, I've had a bunch of people come to me this show saying, I remember when you told me you were going to kill Hellboy 10 years ago. So apparently it's been around for a long time. I always had this idea, not always. But from real early on, I did see that at some point he would run his course on Earth. I had no idea how long it was going to take. It wasn't like I planned, you know, 50 whatever, he's going to die. But I knew where it was going, kind of. It kind of bounced around in a bunch of different directions. But it was really interesting. When I started working with Duncan and I made up this three-book structure, I realized, oh, all the people that I need to pull this off are in the room. So a lot of times it's like, well, I know somebody's going to do this, so we need somebody else doing this, and somebody else is going to do this. But it was kind of almost accidental that I realized, oh, the pig-headed guy, he's going to do this, which is going to trigger this, and I've got this other character that's going to come in and do that. So I didn't really realize the players were on the board. Which is exciting. It's exciting when, to a certain extent, you let these characters kind of drift around so they get into the right spot and you go, oh, perfect. So,
Thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask, in your writing, it seems like in every issue you put some kind of a mythology, or like you said earlier, from Grimm fairy tales, a lot of that stuff. I was wondering which one is your favorite, or at least more interesting source that you ever grabbed from?
Well, I mean, my early on, when I was like in elementary school, I remember checking out a book on Norse mythology. So I will always have a soft spot for Norse mythology, and I was a big fan of the Stan and Jack Thor comic, which was my introduction to a lot of mythology. And it's just loaded with monsters. A lot of the Eastern stuff, which I find fascinating, I still can't make heads or tails of, because it's so, I mean, it's, some of that, those cosmologies are just so intricate, and, but Norse mythology was, you know, guys with hammers banging against trolls, so that appeals to the simple human of me.
Another question. I wanted to know about the art style. It's kind of, it almost feels like a Japanese, like, every page is almost like a series of woodblock paintings, like Japanese woodblock paintings. They're like flat, but they're also three-dimensional. I wanted to know what kind of inspiration or other comic books did you
have? I grew up reading Jack Kirby comics. That I wanted to be Frank Frazetta for a bunch of years. I'm mostly influenced by painters. I went through phases. I really wanted to be Bernie Wrightson for a couple of years, but it's, other than in general inspiration art-wise, there haven't been a lot of specific cartoonists. But I've tried to imitate my storytelling. I don't think, other than Jim Starlin, I love Jim Starlin's storytelling. There aren't a lot of guys where I look at and say, oh, I want to tell a story like this. Because mostly, until I started working in comics, I never planned to draw comics. I didn't set out to be a comic book artist. I was an illustrator who wanted to do comic book covers. So I never trained myself. I never showed this. I did a total of, I think, 3 sample comic book pages. But, you know, it wasn't in my portfolio when I went up to Marvel. So I'm influenced by a lot of painters. Shape guys, though. Illustrators like M.C. Wyatt, guys like Van Gogh, guys like Edward Hopper, guys that are a very, you know, strong, dark light composition, powerful stuff.
I really, really love monsters, and I like drawing monsters as well. I like your work with Guy Gaddis a lot. That stuff is insane. I really want to talk about more the visual process of developing these types of crazy beasts. Maybe about making something that's somewhat memorable and what were behind that.
The beauty of drawing folklore is there's usually some vague description of a monster, so there's only the challenge of saying, how do you draw a snake with a tiger head? You know? And then you play fast or loose with that. But what's been exciting, going back to Guy Gaddis, and you see the sketchbook section in the DPRD books, is we bounce these monster designs back and forth. So Guy and I did that. James and I have done that. Tyler and I have done that. We bounce these creature designs back and forth. And it usually starts, these days, I guess it usually starts with one of these guys, and then I get it. Well, you might just put my little spin on it, and then we bounce it back and forth. So the creature design stuff's been a really fun process. Good?
Yeah, that's pretty much how it goes. you draw a monster, and you think, oh man, really nailed this monster. I'm gonna send it off.
Maybe I shouldn't let him talk.
And then Mike goes, oh, hey, I don't know how we can make that actually be good. And it's amazing. It's fun. It's fun to go back and forth. I enjoy it.
And look, because you work with other guys and they just bring something else to it. And it's just a fun game of bouncing that stuff back and forth.
Okay, she walked away. If you had any dream team up with Hellboy or any other comic or movie character or cartoon character, who would it be? This is a question for all of you.
I can't think of any that I'd like to do.
No, I'm just saying fictional in your head.
That's not the question that's in my head.
I don't think any of us would think about it like that. Crossover's like fun.
The Goon one was fun.
Beast of Burden was fun, but like they come up for a reason. Like he wants to work with a friend, basically, or a sort of. But like we don't really think about like, oh, you know, Hellboy and Etrigan would be amazing. But no, wouldn't it just be
like, But yeah, I kind of function in my world. You know, I'm not looking over the fence at Marvel and DC going, yeah, but if only Hellboy could team up with Galactus. Then we have, I get into my own little world. Actually, I think Lobster Johnson and Hellboy would be a cool team up, but those guys have never met.
They didn't.
I think they just missed each other. No, they didn't.
Yeah. Right. So,
that'd be
kind of
interesting.
What about you guys? What do you
dying to see? Quit Hellboy back in PPRD. It'll sell. Can I have one more? While Hellboy's in hell, is he going to see any unfriendly faces from his past?
Yes. Some friendly, some unfriendly, but I don't want it to turn into an entire parade of rematches. So I've got more planned than just a, I'll go back to drawing all these guys that I know how to draw.
Thank you.
I have a friend that's going to study in Prague for a semester. And he's at the Hellboy Bank.
Studying alchemy?
She goes to the Galvin School of Individual Studies. I don't know what the hell.
Okay. Yeah.
there were some places in Prague that inspired you, or those locations in graveyards, I guess, you know, those that you found beautiful.
There's a beautiful cemetery, I don't know what it's called, but where we shot a chunk of the Hellboy movie, and that was spectacular. It was everything you wanted in the cemetery. And actually, there was this great crypt on the ground that had been cracking. Fortunately, I'm with these special effects guys who have a camera on a string. So they stuck a camera down there, took pictures inside this crypt, then we got the picture back. It was like, oh, look, collapsed coffins with skulls stuck in them. That was pretty cool. Everybody has access to that. It's cliche, it's in all the guidebooks, but the old Jewish cemetery in Prague is really spectacular. It's just graphically, I could draw that place all day long.
Do you know the name of the one?
No, I don't remember. But it's where they shoot all the movies. It's custom made to make movies. Because it's a spectacular cemetery that's gotten a chunk of just nothing next to it. So guys go in like we did, From Hell there also. We can build a chunk of fake cemetery next to the real cemetery. So your actors can walk all over a chunk of fake cemetery and have this whole spectacular real cemetery behind it. So if you actually go back and watch the funeral scene in From Hell and the scene in Hellboy, you can see the same crypts in the background.
Cindy Tynan, the reporter from Burning Hell, is she all related to Daryl the Wendigo? His name was also Tynan, probably an O instead of an A.
She's a reporter in the Lobster Johnson book?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, it's probably John, because John wrote both those books. It's probably John unconsciously using the same name, unless he's planning some stuff that we don't know about.
And there's stuff that he doesn't tell us about.
That's true. John is one of those, what's going on? He goes, we'll find out. I'm the co-writer. Don't worry about it. I got it.
Yeah. No, I don't know what's going to happen about that. But if it's felt differently, John's really careful and nervous.
Yeah,
it's
definitely
so if it's felt differently, then probably it's going to happen.
So I'm a pretty big fan of ambiguity in the storytelling. And someone in 2001 picks out a Savior of Lost. Or maybe recently, I got something like Prometheus. And.
Guys, lost me, man.
I was wondering if, and it's even Hellboy, obviously, I was wondering if that was conscious, and if you had any plans to actually answer everything, because I prefer if you didn't.
Well, yeah, I at this point, there are so many things out there, there's no way to answer them all. I mean, it would be a little boring comment if it was just, I've decided I'm done, so here's this. I don't even know what some of the questions are that are out there. The one thing I have consciously done in writing Hellboy, fortunately right from the beginning, is have people say things that I was not 100% sure what they meant, but they sounded good. Maybe I shouldn't give that away. And then it gives me time to figure that out. I mean, it's kind of like doing, well, like when you start a drawing, you don't, at least I don't, and you shouldn't, just start finishing a drawing in one corner and then working your way across. You kind of rough out the whole thing. So I write like that. You know, I rough out things and I go, well, this is kind of ominous, and that sounds like it means something, and it probably means something kind of like this, but I'm not going to write myself into a corner right away. So I do know a lot of stuff. I do probably know a lot of answers to certain things, but I don't want to just drop out a big history lesson in the middle of a comic. If there's a place to naturally answer things, it's fine, but it's not my goal to answer all these questions.
Thank you.
In any of the events of the Hellboy and Hell or any of the other books, are they going to affect either world? It's like, anything that's going to be BPRD can affect Hellboy and Hell, and Hellboy and Hell can affect BPRD?
Well, the one thing I'm promising not to do is do a book where you have to read one book and then, oh, to find out what happens, you got to read Hellboy and Hell or vice versa. But there are things that are coming up, I know in Peter Snyberg's book, that relate to Hellboy and Hell or relate to the current political situation in Hell. So it is a connected world, but it's the connections aren't super apparent. So yeah, certain things that happen in Hell will bleed over into not only BPRD, but another project that we haven't announced yet. But they won't be so laced together that it's one big mess.
Yeah, and like the word you used was effect. And I don't know that they do actually effect, but you know, I've seen this in Hellboy and in college and in the other books, but like the Peter Snyder thing, the connections are clear. The thing James has done connects up with some key things that you're going to do.
Right.
But yeah, it's more like a reflection that this is all the same world, these characters are all connected, but the Hell is definitely very separate from what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, and Hell is, it's its own place, and it really couldn't give a shit what's going on in Earth. But there are some things that go on in Hell that are so big that they can't help but bounce off things that go on Earth.
I just had a question about the rumors of the Joe Gallo movie adaptation. And I was just wondering if they were true or how much involved.
What have you heard?
I haven't heard that much. I just heard that.
It has been optioned. And the director at Hatch, who I believe, at least the last time I spoke to him, he was planning on writing the screenplay himself, was Alex Price, who did Crow and Dark City. And boy, if that happens, I'd be a very happy man. Thank you.
Thank you. I love Kelsey Mythology, and you with the sponsor was awesome. And then you went to destroy Great Britain.
Yeah.
And that. And I was wondering if there's going to be an element in that story that you know, you went to hell. Because, yeah, what's the stuff that you want to put elements and not do
Well, Hell is my playground. There are so many different variations on Hell. The last thing I wanted to do was say, I'm doing this, you know, mythology's version of Hell. So I made my version of Hell, but what I really do want to continue to do with what I did when Hellboy was on Earth, Hellboy wandered all over the Earth, and he probably had adventures in every corner of the globe. What I found, like when I drew a story about Hellboy in Japan, is I don't know what the hell Japan looks like. You have to draw a house in Japan, I didn't know how the doors work. I didn't know just silly little things. I mean, in America, I know what stuff looks like. In Europe, I kind of know what stuff looks like. In Japan, I have no clue. In India, forget about it. So I wanted to continue doing adaptations of various folk tales or throwing, you know, Hellboy interacting with different cultural things. And he's going to continue to do that in Hell. So it's
my plan that there is an Asian neighborhood in hell. There is an Eastern European neighborhood in hell. It's probably a big Indian kind of thing, where I get to make it as much like Japan, China, India, wherever, as I want to. But I have the freedom, you know, artistically, to play so fast and loose with what the real world would look like. But it would give me the chance to do those kinds of stories.
Great, thank you. I have two questions.
Sure.
Are you doing the art Hellboy now?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
will there ever be a third animated Hellboy?
I can't say that there positively won't. But without a live-action picture out there, it seems unlikely. There certainly has never been any talk of another animated film. So, you know, if another Hellboy movie were made, or a giant DVD movie, or a TV series, whatever, you know, that might give rise to an animated thing. But as things stand, I said, there's it doesn't look too good.
Alright, you got like, you know, Berman, you know, like homunculus, what kind of other supernatural like heroes do you want to do? That you haven't done yet?
I want to do all of them. it'd be easier to come up with a list of things I don't want to do. And actually right now I can't think of anything on that. I have no plans for unicorns. crazy enough, I did just find myself in a position where I have the question of, am I actually going to grow a unicorn or not? Somehow. Well, that's good too. I have run into a unicorn question. But unicorns and I think the fairies and stuff. I like all that stuff. So I look forward to putting my spin on different things. Anyway.
I would love to see someone who is deserving. I'd love to see more involved, more adventures continue in comics.
Yes.
But if you wrap up in Hellboy and Hell, you know, are there any plans to continue that? You know, would you possibly consider relinquishing some of the writing duties?
I've already relinquished 99% of the writing duties to Chris. Chris has been doing 99% of the writing in Baltimore from the very beginning of the comic. So, if that fool didn't read it thinking it was me, cool. I can promise that I won't be doing any less writing in Baltimore in the future.
But we do have a bunch of Baltimore stuff.
Yes.
There are a bunch of one-shots and two-shoot stories that are kind of recently. There's a one-shot in November called The Play, which is one of my favorite things we've done. Ben did an amazing job. Chris did a great job. It's a really good standalone issue.
I stayed out of the way.
And then there'll be a couple more Baltimore pieces. And then we're going to do some longer stories again.
Yeah.
So we've got plans for Baltimore. Yeah. We've got a schedule map out of Baltimore that goes out to 24.
This question is actually for the other three guys.
Absolutely.
You all get to read the Hellboy and Geek Fairy source before any of us do.
Yeah, sometimes at like 11 o'clock on Saturday night. I got 7 pages of script last weekend. I'm not going to make you read it right now, but could you read it right now? Would you mind if you read it right now? So, yeah, of course, you know, I have a lot of ideas on this.
Yeah,
it's
very
interesting.
So, not spoiling anything in the future, but things that have just recently been released, what were the things that you remember reading and going, either, I can't believe we're going to get to bring this to people, or I can't believe I get to draw this?
Or I can't believe I have to draw this. I hope you brought that.
On Long and Dead, I was a big Dirty fan way before I ever got a job. I was a joke. I would be good forever. But I read, when I was a cashier at a pharmacy, and I read the last train, what it's called, Volume 8, where the Daimyo and the Jaguar, and I had no idea how to end it. I wanted to know how to end it. was such a joke, but it would be Richard and get a little savagey at the end. It's surreal. It still is surreal. I can't believe I did.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time choosing one specific moment. I think one of my favorite things I ever got was the first time a script said, from our community said, "Hey Tyler, remember to do blah, 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 blah." And I was like, "Oh, you wrote this for me." That was pretty exciting. But I still, every day I wake up and I'm like, I can't believe I'm drawing DPRP. It's one of the only, what do you call it, an adventure book?
Yeah.
A horror book that I've read before. And it was one of my favorite comics. And yeah, drawing is pretty awesome.
The moment I remember best that just blew my mind was actually when Dave had colored the third issue of Fury where Hellboy dies. And it was my birthday. And I was at a bar waiting for one of my friends and my girlfriend to show up. And I looked at my phone and Dave had sent me the 24 colored pages. And I sat there on my little tiny phone and went through these unlettered pages that held what it had. And I had a drink. And I was like on the verge of tears. Like, I loved that comic so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hellboy dies. It's no big deal. And the next day I called Mike for it. Maybe I jumped in and texted him at that point. I was like, this is so good. We've got to keep it as silent as we can. It just
don't wreck it with words. Duncan did such a good job. Don't rain on it.
And then Mike tends to have a light touch of dialogue anyway. It had two big silent passages in that one. But reading Hellboy, yeah, seeing those pages come in before anybody else was going to see it was pretty
well. I mean, that because of the big thing, I've had people say to me, "I can't believe you let Duncan be the artist to kill off Hellboy. How can you let somebody else kill off your character?" And there was really no way to tell Duncan, "Get out of the way, I'm going to draw the last couple issues," because, man, can I sell those pages? That wasn't really a bit fair. And because Duncan was drawing Hellboy, and Duncan could draw girls much better than I could, Hellboy was able to actually have a relationship. And so there were so many things that Duncan was able to do between Hellboy and the girl Alice. Things that I thought, oh God, I'm gonna, not only did I, you know, thank God I didn't have to draw it, because I couldn't have drawn it, it looked like a piece of firewood. but I thought, oh God, it's a kind of a romance-y thing, I'm going to have to write some awkward romance-y kind of dialogues. Not my comfort zone. But Duncan did it so well. There were so many places where I just said, right. You know, it was such a pleasure. I mean, it's been a pleasure working with every artist I've worked with. Well, not everyone. But the vast majority of the guys I've worked with. And Duncan just gave me so many things that I didn't have to write. He pulled it off and I was able to sit back and look and stuff, which is, you know, what I want. But, I mean, to go back to the beginning of this question, it was funny because when Duncan took over doing Hellboy, he was such a big Hellboy fan, he was really conflicted about doing this book because he wanted to read the book. He wanted to read the comic, he didn't want to read the script. I'm like, well, Duncan, if you don't draw it, there ain't going to be a comic. So, really, if you're a big Hellboy fan, this is your chance to make it exist. But and of course, my tendency is that anybody with the misfortune of getting me on the phone, I want to tell them not only the plot for the story they're working on, but the next 32 years worth of story. So I always be telling Duncan something, and Duncan be like, I don't want to know it all yet. Leave me alone. So.
Yes, thanks. I buy your books because almost every frame or every page has something in it where it's not just cool to look at, but I can look at it over and over and it doesn't get old. And to me, that is what the meaning of that is art, not just a comic book. Are there any contemporary artists, or specifically cartoonists, besides your collaborators, that you see that had the same effect on you? Think, wow, that's just amazing.
Huh.
Wow, it sounds crappy, but I didn't know. The truth is, I don't look at that many comics. And I don't read, maybe a little far behind on reading our books. I don't read that many comics, so it's hard for me to think of guys that are working right now. But one guy I was mentioning is Jim Woodring. His Frank book is, I think, so brilliant that he's one of those guys, if I could ever do anything that felt like a Jim Woodring story, or do something as individual and personal as a Jim Woodring story, I really feel like I did something. How about you guys? Yes. What do you guys think is amazing out there?
There's a lot of stuff. There's a couple things specifically I can think of. Like there's been a couple George Pratt drawings, mostly his drawings more than his paintings. That I'll be flipping through a book and I'll see it and I'll be like, hey, that's really amazing. And I'll close the book and like an hour later I have to go back because I haven't stopped thinking about it. And I'm like, I gotta look at that some more. There's a couple Curry drawings that. But I've had to do the same thing. I just have to go back and be like, what the hell is going on? Why is this so amazing? There's got to be a million other guys. But it cannot be so. When 100,000 people are sharing it.
I feel that way about continuing to get a lot of fun. Their stuff like sucks me in a way that's different from most anything else out there. What your specific question is about the way that the art looks on the digital screen, right? Most of what we read digital comics on, the resolution is so crisp, it's so great, it's better than the print. Like, I prefer books. I don't read anything digitally because I look at the screen too much of it anyway. So I don't read comics digitally, but it's not because the art doesn't look great. One of the big things is these days more and more people create the art on a computer. The colors, like Dave Stewart's stuff, looks like real paint sometimes, but it's all done on the computer. Every bit is done on the computer. So in a sense, when you're looking at your comic, there's no comic book retailers in the room, right? When you're looking at a comic on an iPad, it's kind of more what Dave was creating than when it's printed in a comic, because we have a print comic, because we have limited control. There's all those big dots, you know, the line work can get pixelated. It can look sharper on something.
Your colors get muddier, and yeah, your contrast can go away.
And weird things happen, like, you know, the books are printed on these big sheets, and one page has a lot of black on it, which kind of happens a lot with this one. The black might bleed from this page onto this page, and get weird, unpredictable color things that is an issue if you're looking at a PDF or an iPad. So, as far as that part goes, it's an advantage with digital.
There's a cool thing about digital that, at least the way it changed how I work, is I don't have to worry about middleman. I get direct feedback, I have a direct audience. I don't have to worry about it. If I would ever do my own thing, or ever work on my own short story, I have an audience out there. However big or small, I have a direct line and a direct line. I mean, they can have my email if they want to. I think that's fascinating. I think there's less hands in the pie you can really get. I don't work digitally, I work 100% traditional. But I do, like, I'm really interested in digital color, and digital color just looks better on the screen.
Do you mess with any of your stuff digitally before you send it in? Because I, for most of my books these days, I never see original art. All three of these guys, or his wife, but all three of them, they scan their artwork and send it to me. So I don't get originals like I used to. So with you, am I just getting a really clean scan, or do you do anything?
I do, it depends on how secure I'm feeling. If I'm really insecure, I mean, little faces that are way in the background, you know, you can try yourself insane. To try and get that with a micron, and sometimes it's easier to just go in digitally and make it all pretty. It's pretty valuable, but that is it's a certain situation on the master level. I never do anything 100% digital. It's just, depends on how bad I screwed up on the stage. If I can fix it a little bit, I'll fix the line. Sometimes it goes tape the whiteout so thick that I just have to go in and clean it up. You know, it just has to get clean. It's a great tool, totally invaluable.
It's probably good that I don't scan my originals because he's every day. Right. Every time I scan it, wait a minute, that? You know, I get that stuff handed off and out of the studio and color off and never get on to the next day.
Yeah, I think I work all traditionally too, but I really have I've started really enjoying reading digital on my iPad. One of the big things is, well, there's two like big reasons. One, I read in bed a lot. And I can do it without a nightlight. It's obviously glowing in my face. But the other thing too is, like, they don't really tell you this when you start making comics as a professional, but comics just start coming to you, like, in the mail. They just show up. And you end up with, like, stacks all over your house, and you look like the hoarder people are. So I've been really glad to start doing reading stuff digitally. As far as working digitally, yeah, what I had to do, there was a snafu with a recent issue where I forgot to draw hats on everybody. So I had to go through and patch the artwork and give my hats on all these people. And I did it all, you know, on the page and then re-scanned it and then lined it up in Photoshop to make it actually printable. But, yeah.
When I first did Native Sapien, I guess it was marking on his head. It was sort of the place in the 80s. And I didn't know this. Mike was the one person who knows this. The markings slowly drift closer to his eye because he's changing in it. So I drew all the markings touching his brow. It's going all the way down. I hand the pages up, and like one by one, every single panel, I had to chase that block. And she told them that it was panel for panel. And it's kept going back and going back.
Sorry about that. I think we've got. You have to push before, right? You with the blue shirt?
Yes.
Okay, so I think you and the yellow, I think that's going to be our last question. Sorry.
So I'm a little confused because Square has been Hellboy and Hell before in diapers running around.
Oh, that's Hellboy Jr., which Bill Ray was responsible for. I don't want to take any credit. I can take some blame, but I might be no credit for that. That was a completely other thing.
I'm curious, though, there's some scenes that look like they're very all over the satellite. But we'll use some car in fact the scale. I'm curious to see if in Hellboy Hell, are those scenes, is there going to be some bar open?
No. I mean, that hell is like a cartoon hell.
And that Hellboy is a different hell.
That's an entirely different Hellboy, even though I didn't draw that story. But that's just volcanoes and fire, and it was silly and goofy. It was meant to be more like a Harvey comic, you know? So, no, my hell is a whole different mess. And that's it?
Yeah.